so forth. Here in Hebrews chapter 11, a passage that's been called the Hall of Faith, I want to just encourage you to remember that these are not far away, glorified characters to whose faith we could never live up, but rather the whole point of this chapter is so that we could have illustrations of real life people with struggles like ours, tangled up problems like ours, fears and doubts like ours, people with warts and checkered pasts and fears, and they just believed that God is who he says he is and that he'll do all he has promised to do, and they believed that to the extent to be able to obey. And their examples are given to us so that we can see what it looks like to obey God, to persevere in obedience by faith, even when it's difficult. Our text is chapter 11 and verses 29 through 31. Let's read those verses. Verse 29 says, "By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land." This on the tail of verse 28 tells us about how they observed the Passover. "Passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, which the Egyptians, essaying to do so, were drowned. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were compassed about 7 days. By faith, the harlot Rahab perished not with them that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace." First point to notice here in this text is that faith, verse 29, is a faith that steps out under God's protection. We see that in the crossing of the Red Sea, stepping out under God's protection even when it seems scary. When we think of the crossing of the Red Sea, our predominant association of that is just the wonder of God's power and how, well, don't you think it would have been just really awesome to be able to pass through those open waters? It's easy to imagine that it would be when we know the outcome and when we don't have the chariots of the Egyptians sundering in the background. And we need to go back to Exodus 14 to be able to kind of get a flavor for the faith that is a real-life faith that the Israelites had to express here at the crossing of the Red Sea. Exodus chapter 14. I invite you to turn there. I want to just skim the first half of that chapter and point out a few of the verses that the writer of Hebrews is trusting his readership to be abundantly familiar with, one of the favorite texts of the Old Testament accounts for the Hebrews. Chapter 14 starts this way. "The Lord spake unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the children of Israel, that they turn and encamp before Pi-Hahiroth, this one place and this other place, and the sea over against this other place," and I can't pronounce those names, but what this meant to Moses that I don't understand, and maybe we don't understand, is a geographic setting where the sea is out in front and there are steep embankments on either side. That's what verse 3 means when the Lord says, "Pharaoh will say of the children of Israel, they are entangled in the land. The wilderness has shut them in." They are going into a place where if Pharaoh is to pursue them, he thinks they can't go this way, they can't go that way, the sea is that way, I've got them trapped. "For Pharaoh," verse 3, "will say to the children, they're entangled in the land." Okay, so Moses does it. I don't know what God's going to do, but here we go. The people are following. Maybe they don't really realize everything that God has just told Moses and really what they're walking into. They haven't ever been allowed to be out of their, you know, the city that they've been enslaved in. And they find themselves now in this place, hemmed in, walled in, the sea in front, walls to either side, and now here comes the sound of Pharaoh's army in behind. Verse 10 says, "When Pharaoh drew nigh, the children of Israel lifted up their eyes, and behold, the Egyptians marched after them." What's the Israelites' reaction? Hebrews 11, faith. No, they were sore afraid. They looked at the wall on that side. They looked at the wall on that side. They saw the dust of the chariots on this side, and ahead only the sea. And they were terrified. They were terrified. This group that's about to be mentioned, Hebrews 11, was sore afraid. And in fact, so afraid and discouraged that in verse 11 they said to Moses, "Because there were no graves in Egypt, hast thou taken us away to die in the wilderness?" They are in despair, the opposite of faith. But Moses says to the people in verse 13, "Fear not. Stand still and see the salvation of the Lord, which he will show to you today. For the Egyptians whom you have seen today, ye shall see them again no more forever." Moses had that faith, and he speaks to instill it in the hearts of the people. And in verse 15, the Lord said to Moses, "Wherefore criest thou unto me? Speak thou unto the children that they go forward." Here's the Israelites. Picture them, an embankment on this side, an embankment on this side, the Egyptians behind them, and all that's in front of them is the sea. But that's not the only thing in front of them. We have to keep reading to find out and really piece this together, because it's not explicitly stated this way, but I think it's accurate to say the pillar of cloud that the Israelites have been following through the wilderness to show them which way to go now stands out over the sea. And they look, and they can't go this way, can't go this way. The sea is above, and for some reason the pillar of cloud is up over the sea. That must be a glitch. We don't know what to do. We don't have boats or helicopters or any such thing. And so, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? And Moses says, "What are we going to do?" And God's reply to that implied question, I believe, is there in verse 15. "Why are you crying unto me? You see the pillar of cloud? Just follow it like you've always followed it. Step out in faith, Moses. It's not a mistake that the cloud stands where the cloud stands. This is the way I want you to go. And yes, it seems scary, but you need to step out, trusting to my protection." Well, the reason I know that that pillar of cloud was out in front of them over the sea is because, he tells Moses in verse 16 to stretch forth his rod and he would open the sea up. But verse 19 says, "The angel of God, which went before the camp of Israel, removed and went behind them." The pillar of cloud went from before their face and stood behind them. So it was in front of them out over the sea. And when Moses lifts his rod, and when God brings a powerful east wind to divide the sea, and when the Israelites begin to step out in faith under God's protection, even though it seems scary, that pillar of cloud moves over behind them. And for what purpose? It stood behind them, verse 20, "and came between the camp of the Egyptians and the camp of Israel, and was a cloud and darkness to them," the Egyptians, "but it gave light by night to these," the Israelites, "so that one came not near the other all night." You know, some of the dramatic recreations, film representations of the crossing of the Red Sea. You get this idea. Here's the Israelites. Oh, and here comes the Egyptians. They're like 20 feet behind us. We got to scoot across real quick, and that'll take about 30 seconds, and then here comes the Egyptians. Realistically, the Israelites took all night to cross the Red Sea. Half a million to a million of them, maybe more. Some children, they had animals and so forth. How could they do that? Well, God had created this thick cloud, this pillar of cloud that went behind them as a shield. And then verse 21 says that Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and the Lord caused the sea to go back by a strong east wind all that night and made the sea dry land, and the waters were divided, and the children of Israel went into the midst of the sea upon dry ground, and the waters were a wall unto them on their right and on their left. There's a wall on the right, a wall on the left, a wall of cloud behind them, and a clear path ahead for those who had stepped out under God's protection, even when it seems scary. All right, back to Hebrews chapter 11, please. God had created what one preacher called a divinely designed trap where there was no possible escape. There was only an impossible escape. But God had divinely designed this trap to test the faith of Israel, where for a moment there, they were hemmed in. There was no possible avenue of escape from this. No one had ever heard of such a thing as a parting of the sea. People could not imagine any conceivable escape from the Egyptians that were about to bear down on them. And why didn't God just part it as they were coming so they could see the way? It was a test. It was a trap to cause them to make a faith decision, even in a time when they were very afraid. We looked at verse 27, kind of an interesting one, where Moses forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king. but noted how chapter 2 and verse 14 says that when Moses found out that the thing was known about his killing of the Egyptian, Moses feared and said, surely this thing is known, and he fled from Egypt. So was he afraid or was he not afraid? Were the Israelites at the bank of the Red Sea, were they sore afraid, or did they have Hebrews 11 faith? And the answer, I think, has to be both. So let me ask you tonight, question number one, do you have a fearless faith? And that's a pretty hard question. And we could feel like, as we read the 11th chapter of Hebrews, if we do so kind of quickly without giving too much thought, that, well, my faith could never measure up to these people. I stopped the mouths of lions and, you know, did all these things. And, you know, when I get difficult or threatening news, I'll be honest, my heart sinks. When there's threats around, I get scared. I don't, you know, Hebrews 11 faith just kind of seems inaccessible. I think it's helpful to remember that their hearts sank too, that they grew afraid too. And we have to get beyond. The thing is getting beyond that fear, getting beyond those doubts, and being willing to obey. So it's really not a fair question. Do you have a fearless faith? Faith doesn't mean you're never afraid. Faith means your belief in God's person and God's promise overcomes your fear to the point of obedience. Now, the more we grow in our faith, the more we see God's hand at work, the more fear begins to be pushed out. Remember the disciples on the boat and the raging storm, and what does Jesus say? Why are you afraid? You have little faith. The more faith we have, the less fear will be there. But fear, we're human, we're mortal. There will be fear. The fear, we just need enough faith to overcome that fear and to obey and to do right. Do you know you can obey in faith even when you're scared? Do you know you can obey shaking in your boots about what the consequences are going to be? That's faith. You can obey, and no matter how you're feeling on the inside, if your motivation is to trust God and to do right, believing that He is who He says He is and that He'll do all He has promised to do, that's faith. And so a better question, let's go ahead and strike a line through, do you have a fearless faith? I don't think a mortal has a fearless faith. We have what we instead want to strive for is, do you have an obedient faith? Can you obey? Can you step out in faith under God's protection, even when it seems scary? Verse 30 gives the next episode of faith, the walls of Jericho, the walls of Jericho that fall. But before we get to Jericho, and in a three-point sermon tonight, three-fourths of the time is on the first point. So really want to notice something that we're reading between the lines a little bit here. Because I know this is a familiar passage, we could just read it and highlight these things. Oh yes, knew that story since I was a kid. But think about this for a moment, that there's a 40-year interval between verse 20 and verse 30, verse 29 and verse 30. So you have the victory at the Red Sea. They were afraid, but they still stepped out. And each step was a step of faith, a wall of water on either side. The Egyptians were still coming behind. Each step was a step of faith, and they made it through. And God commends that in Hebrews 11. By faith, they crossed the Red Sea as on dry land. Hooray, what a victory. This same group of people, just a very short time earlier, had verse 28, had obeyed in the Passover observance and spread the blood and spared their firstborn. And that was such a great step of obedience. It's recorded here for us in Scripture in chapter 11, their faith, had the faith to obey. But let's remember that those who would encircle Jericho those 40 years later was an entirely different group of people. Because those people who spread the blood and had the faith to obey at the Passover, those same people who stepped out into the midst of the sea between the two walls of water and crossed the sea in faith, those people dropped dead in the wilderness as a consequence of a failure to have faith and to obey when they reached the promised land, sent the spies in, who came back and said, there's giants in there, they're too big, they're too strong, we'll never take this city. And the writer of Hebrews has already condemned their lack of faith earlier in the book. And the reason for bringing that up is to point out that when I say, hey, you can be afraid and it's okay, we're mortal, and God understands that, it's not to say that, well, you know, we have flaws and we'll falter, and doesn't really matter, you know, how you're feeling or how you're doing, because God understands. No, the difference is that Moses was initially afraid of Pharaoh, but he came to a place of obedience. He stammered at the burning bush and said, oh, could you send someone else? I'm slow of speech. I'm this, I'm that. He doubted. He was afraid. Abraham laughed. Sarah laughed. They doubted. They were afraid, but they obeyed. Their faith overcame their fear. For the 10 spies and for the 99% of Israel who listened to them, their fear overcame their faith. And they said, wow, they didn't say, wow, it's scary, but we'll do it anyway because we obey. They said, wow, it's scary. We're not going to do it. We're going to disobey God. And they would reap the consequences of that. You don't have to turn here, but if you can, if you want, listen. In verse 3, this is what the writer, chapter 3, this is what the writer says about that generation. Chapter 3, verses 17 through 19. But with whom was God grieved 40 years? Was it not with them that had sinned, whose carcasses fell in the wilderness? And to whom swear he that they should not enter into his rest? But to them that believed not, so we see that they could not enter in because of unbelief. Unbelief. The same people who had the Hebrews 11 commendable faith to observe the Passover, the Hebrews 11 commendable faith to cross the Red Sea, in unbelief failed and let fear overcome faith at the border of the Promised Land. So the question really becomes, not do you have a fearless faith, but do you have an obedient faith? And if the answer is yes, don't rest there, because there has to be a follow-up question that we need to consider, and that is, do you have a persevering faith? We could have an obedient faith that rests on past victories. And some of you have been saved for decades, followed the Lord for decades. You've seen great victories in your life. You've trusted the Lord through some real trials. We appreciate you so much. I look up to you personally so much. You know, many all around the room tonight. But never relax. Never come off guard. Because as we see from comparing these two accounts, you could have commendable faith, commendable faith, commendable faith, and then it condemned for a lack of faith in your maybe your waning years, or maybe just at the border of the Promised Land. What can happen, I understand, is that as we grow older, which all of us are doing, dauntless optimism of youth begins to wane. And in our older years, the things that didn't used to bother you anymore start to bother you more. The things in the political sphere and the things in the economic realm and the things in the social scene that you used to just kind of shrug off and know that you'd get through it now kind of maybe keep you awake at night and now kind of gnaw away at you. And now there's, you know, there's a cynicism that starts to set in when you've seen enough of life. The people sin nature conquers so often that you can have really a pessimistic realism in our later years that says, yeah, well, yeah, faith is all great and everything, and we almost lose the childlike faith and say, but I know how things really go. Persevere. Don't give in that way. And young people, young adults here that are you know, students that you've made the right choice to trust Christ as Savior, to follow Him with your life. Maybe you've seen some spiritual victories of surrendering your life to the Lord, of getting in church and in Bible study and trying to choose right friends. And a few successes can get us to where we feel like I'm someone that God's pleased with. I'm a Hebrews chapter 11 faith and I'm going the right direction. Failure could be just right around the corner if we let our guard down. So we have to do what chapter 2 tells us and not let to pay closer attention to the things that we've been taught, lest at any time we should let them slip. We've never arrived. We've never accumulated such a track record that our faith is secure and no longer tested. If a generation could be twice listed in the Hall of Faith, and then still ultimately their legacy is to be condemned because of their lack of belief at the border of Canaan, none of us can let our guard down. No matter what age and life stage you are at, persevere. God is who He says He is. He will do all He has promised to do. He will reward those who diligently seek Him. We'll suffer great loss if we let these things slip. Keep going. Push through the doubts. Push through the fears. Overcome them with faith and obey. Scripture passage from 1 John chapter 5, "For this is the love of God, that we keep His commandments." Just obey. "And His commandments are not grievous. For whatsoever is born of God overcometh the world, and this is the victory that overcometh the world, even our faith." The same faith that saw victories in Hebrews 11 is the faith under which we step out under God's protection today in obedience. So once again, you don't have to have a heroic faith. You just have to have enough faith to obey. Faith doesn't mean you don't have fears, doesn't mean you don't have doubts. Faith means believing in God's person and promise to the extent that you consistently obey. Doesn't mean never fearing, doesn't mean never doubting. It means believing in God's person and promise to the extent that you consistently obey. Faith steps out under God's protection even when it seems scary. Number two, faith moves forward under God's plan even when it seems crazy. Verse 30 says, "By faith the walls of Jericho fell down." After what? After they were compassed about 7 days. Imagine Joshua, who had a military mind. Those of Israel's fighting men, 200,000 had left Egypt. Don't know how many they had at Jericho. But military minds that get together as this city that they need to conquer, but boy, they're fortified, and these walls are high enough, thick enough, that houses can actually be within the walls, whether between or upon or somehow built in. And what are we going to do? We can't starve them out. The Bible tells us that it was just after harvest, so they would have plenty of food inside. There was a natural spring, archaeologists tell us, inside. So just waiting them out wasn't really an option. The walls were built in such a way, archaeologists tell us, that the ladders wouldn't have been practical. The Israelites, should we build siege works? What do we do to take out the city? And Joshua says, "Well, God told me we need to walk around the city. And the next day we'll walk around it again. On Wednesday we'll walk around it again, and then we'll walk around it one more time. The next day we'll walk around again. We're going to do that for 6 days. On the seventh day, it's different. On the seventh day, we walk around it 7 times. That's it? No, no. We also blow trumpets and shout. That's the plan. Seems crazy. Right, okay, we know the story. We've heard it since we were kids. So, we know, hey, actually sounds like a great plan to me. Well, it probably didn't at the time, right? Seems crazy, but Israel obeyed. They obeyed this impenetrable city. They walked around again. The next day they walked around again, not making a sound. Everyone's silent as they walked around. On the sixth day, they walked around. I don't know if archers were on top of the walls making fun of them or what, but they walk around. On the seventh day, they walk around the seventh time, and Joshua says, "Let it go," and they blow the horns, and everybody shouts, and the Bible says the walls fell down flat, and Israel was able to come and conquer the city. So, interesting, these two verses back to back, you have the walls of the sea and of the cloud behind, and then the walls of Jericho. We see that God can erect walls from anything to protect you. He's our defensive God. God can eradicate walls made of anything to advance you. He's our God of the offensive. Of course, we're not looking to conquer any cities in terms of military conquest today. But 2 Corinthians 10, verses 4 and 5 tells us this: the weapons of our warfare are not carnal, but mighty through God, to the pulling down of strongholds, casting down imaginations and every high thing that exalteth itself against the knowledge of God, and bringing into captivity every thought to the obedience of Christ. God has a conquest plan for you. He wants you to make military advances in your life, not wielding the sword against our neighbors, but in spiritual battle, claiming territory from Satan, not surrendering the areas of our lives spiritually that would make us vulnerable to him, but putting on the armor of God and taking the sword of the Spirit, moving forward spiritually. That's going to involve attacking some sin. And that's not just, you know, a metaphor to sound good and nod our heads and go home from, but that's this 2 Corinthians passage. What is the sin that you're struggling with? It seems insurmountable. It seems you can't have victory. God can tear those strongholds down. Do you have faith that they had in Hebrews 11? They're just walking around it. Do you think God can pull down the strongholds that you're facing in your life? God can still pull strongholds down. Do you believe that? If you believe it, obey and cast down those imaginations. Look to move forward in the spiritual warfare that your daily life is on the offensive. God can eradicate any wall to advance you in that effort. It moves forward under God's plan. And number three, faith identifies with God's people, even when that seems very desperate. And verse 31 tells us of the harlot Rahab, who perished not with them that believed not. And that phrase, believed not, the idea of belief there is the idea of being persuaded to the point of compliance. So really the picture there involves belief, but a belief that obeys. Most modern translations will say, Rahab perished not with them that disobeyed, or that obeyed not, that believed not, when she had received the spies with peace. Probably for the original readers, it might be a little surprising here in the Hall of Faith, when they've heard the names of their Hebrew heroes like Moses and Abraham, to come across the name of a female, Gentile, Canaanite person of ill repute, a known sinner, listed in the Hall of Faith. What was Rahab's decision? Joshua 2 records these words coming from the lips of Rahab: I know that the Lord hath given you the land, speaking to the Israelite spies, and that your terror is fallen upon us, for the Lord your God, he is God in heaven above and in earth beneath. Here's a Gentile, a pagan, a woman with a terrible past, in a city of people who are equally sinful, who are steeped in paganism and in defiance against God. In fact, categorically, verse 31 indicates us that it's the whole city of people that didn't believe, people that didn't obey, people who for generations had sinned against God. And apart from God's judging work against that city, would have continued for generations in disobedience against God. But Rahab chose faith. It wasn't a blind faith. The author of Hebrews has told us faith is substantive. It's the evidence of things seen, the conviction of things seen, the evidence of things hoped for. In verse 10, Rahab of Joshua 2, Rahab says, "For we have heard how the Lord dried up the water of the Red Sea for you when you came out of Egypt, and what ye did unto the two kings of the Amorites." She had heard about this thing that happened 40 years ago, and she chose to believe it. She had seen God's hand at work through Israel. That was God's purpose in calling out that nation, among other things, so that the nations could see his glory. And though all of Jericho was defiant against God's glory, one woman believed. She had the faith to say, I believe that God is who he says he is, and that he will do all he has promised to do. And so I join your side. The book of Joshua goes on to tell us that Rahab lived the rest of her days with the Israelites. She and her household were saved, but at great risk. It was a desperate move for her. Here she was, in a city with impenetrable walls, and the threat, these two spies. And they don't seem to have much of a plan. Who is the earthly-minded person going to side with? Who does the person going by sight alone throw in their lot with? Rahab had to have the eyes of faith to make a desperate decision. Not desperate in the terms of, well, I don't think this will work, but I'll try it. But desperate in terms of what was in her past seemed to be working against her. What was in her surroundings certainly seemed to be working against her. Yet she had the faith to say, I believe that God is who he says he is. He'll do what he has promised to do. And so I stake my life and my eternity on that. Commentator Peter O'Brien put it this way. She was prepared to assume present peril for the sake of future salvation. Her testimony speaks to us. You know, maybe there's someone here, oh, I don't know if God can use me. You know, this chapter 11 of Hebrews stuff seems so far away from me because what my background is and what I've done, and God can't have a plan for me. God can't use me. Characters like Rahab take away all of those excuses. That's what they are. They feel like humility, but they're really excuses to keep you from doing what God has called you to do. Well, I can't because of my past. No, you can obey no matter what your past. You can obey no matter what your surroundings. Rahab is example that you could be the only one in your family trying to do right and still obey and still have commendable faith. You could be the only one in your city trying to do right and still obey and still have commendable faith. So thankful that the Lord saw fit to include Rahab here. As we close, I want to offer one final Christmas tie-in, speaking of future salvation, and that is, faith through the Exodus and conquest, Hebrews chapter 11, but also I want to just read a few verses from Matthew chapter 1. In Matthew 1, I think it's verse 16, that Matthew will say, now the birth of Jesus Christ was on this wise. But before he sets that stage, he wants to give the background, the backdrop, the roots of the Christmas story, and he does that by a genealogy. And as I start to read this genealogy of that maybe you hear at Christmas time. Matthew, writing in Greek, takes the Hebrew names that make up the genealogy of Christ and translates them in the Greek, and then our English translators take those Greek translations and put them into English. And what's that is resulted, if you're looking at the King James, is with some spellings we're not used to, so I just want to read it, and I'll try to do it with their Hebrew names. It might not be exactly what you see in front of you. The book of the generation of Jesus Christ, the son of David, the son of Abraham. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac begat Jacob, and Jacob begat Judah and his brethren, and Judah begat Perez and Zerah of Tamar, and Perez begat Hezron, and Hezron begat Ram, and Ram begat Amminadab, and Amminadab begat Nashon, and Nashon begat Salmon, and Salmon begat Boaz of Rahab. Aren't you thankful that Rahab had the faith to assume present peril for the sake of future salvation? And in fact, our salvation is linked to that decision through the genealogy of Jesus Christ, the foreshadow of Christmas. Will you have the faith to obey, assuming present peril for the sake of future salvation? With God's help, we can do that. We can believe that God is, and that he's a rewarder of them that diligently seek him, and that faith can motivate us to live forever.